Last time together, I don't know about you, but we have covered a lot of things this week. Like last night, some ladies came up to me and they're like, hey Rich, what about the fact that the demoniac shows up in multiple different gospels? I'm like, yeah, it's in Matthew, it's in Mark, and it's in Luke. John doesn't think it's important enough to share, so he doesn't, but the other three put it in there. But Matthew decides to tell us that there are two demoniacs. Yet our good friend Luke and our good friend Mark only tell us about one. You know, and so the questions are, how come? Why is that? And you know what? Some of these things we just don't know. And what I wanted to say to you guys is, on my Bible here, I love this Bible. It's my little leather Bible I take everywhere. There's a question mark on it. Why? Because God's the kind of God that you can bring your questions to, and that's okay. We don't have to have all the answers. And I think sometimes as Christians, we feel like we have to be able to give a response to everything. And sometimes it's okay to say we don't know. That doesn't mean that the Bible is less true. You know, there are a bunch of great people who have thought through that question, just even of the demoniac one, who can kind of explain that for us. But it's okay if we don't know the answer to things, because you can keep going back to this and keep letting God bring it to you. And there are things in the Bible that years later, all of a sudden, I'm beginning to understand. You know, I go, oh, that makes more sense now, you know, and God continues to reveal himself to us. So, again, I got a little question mark on my Bible because my God's big enough that I can bring my questions to him, and that's okay. And the rest of the religions of the world that I've spent time, a lot of them in the Middle East, you can't question. You're not allowed to. Christianity, bring your questions because God's a big God. So here we go. I'm going to tell one more story, but I'm also going to give away a couple things. So this is the way the giveaway is going to work, is that I'm going to ask a question, and then you can come up here. And then you have your choice. You don't get my book, though. I'm keeping that. So book staying. So we're going to have a flashlight up here. We're going to have a travel Bible, because I'm hoping someone's going to go travel and need a little Bible for traveling. And then I typically never do this, because these are things we only give out to people who go on our trips. I've got our Israel study guide. I've got our Turkey study guide. And just for fun, I got our Turkey and Greece study guide. So if you win one of these, you probably need to use it and go on a trip to one of these places. So those will be up here. So here goes. If you win, you get to come choose, and whatever's left is left. So what I'm looking for, first hand up that I see, I'm looking for to give me a geographic something like that it would be the size of Israel. So what is the size of Israel, a geographic?
Monterey County.
Want to go off of what I've taught on. Unfortunately, you haven't been with me, but you've been on trip with me. So, I mean, you might have got that right. So very back, right back here. New Jersey, come on up. New Jersey, Massachusetts, Lake Erie. Any of those would be good answers. So you get your choice right here. Okay, next question. First hand up. The name of the cleansing bath that people do before synagogue or before temple? Mikvah, come on up. Good job. You're like, oh, which one? That's the Israel one, yeah. It's packed full of goodies, so it's all yours. All right, you get to choose. The Bible, that's a good one right there. That's the Bible I have that I have wrapped in leather right here. Okay, here's one going back a little ways. Name of the god that was the main god at Caesarea Philippi.
Dionysus?
No, not Dionysus.
Pan,
come on up. Yeah. The grotesque Pan. That was on Sunday morning. So that was like one that you had to have been here all week. So some people have been here all week. What do you know? Crazy. Okay. This one's a little bit tougher, or maybe it'll be really easy. What is the name of the ceremony for coming of age for a girl in the Jewish faith? Bat mitzvah is correct. Come on up. Oh, what else do we got here? That might have been, Becky, we didn't come up with enough. I'm going to have to make one up. All right, your pick right there. That one's turkey. Take turkey grease, then you get both. That one gives you the double up right there. Yeah. Well, way to go. I'll think of another one for the end. And then when we're finished tonight, I'm going to see who wants to come up and do the Shema, and I'm going to give away a backpack. So. All right, one last story. As I tell this story, don't try to figure out the why behind this. There have been very many smart people over the years who have tried. There is no logical answer to the story you're about to hear. This was years ago, probably about 15. Summer was over. Summer staff had just finishing all their work. People had started packing up to leave to go back to college. And one of my particular staff members, she was from out of town, from out of state. And so she went and asked a friend, a guy, said, "Can I borrow your car? Because my friend and I want to go just have a last evening to just reflect on the summer." And the guy, being an incredible guy, you know where I'm going with this, being an incredible guy, said, "Sure, take it." So these two girls grab his truck. It was a GMC Jimmy. And he had it full of all his stuff because he's going back to college. So it was packed full. They get his vehicle. They drive it to the other end of the lake. And they're sitting down on the other end of the lake talking about life, talking about what God had done, talking about the summer, all of these things. It's about midnight. Someone ends up at my house falling apart. Like, "Oh, Rich." Like, I get a phone call and like, "Is Becky there? I need her." And like, we're like trying to console this girl on the phone. And what I hear over the phone makes no sense to me, but it ends up being true when I get there. Somehow, and again, we don't know how. There's no reason to try to figure this out. Somehow, the vehicle that they were in was now at the bottom of the lake. Bottom of the lake. So I rush out to the end of the lake, and we're out there. And lo and behold, the GMC Jimmy is in the bottom of the lake with its headlights on, completely submerged by about 5 feet of water to the roof of it. And I'm standing there with a guy, Chris, who hits his car, and I've got my arms around him. And he's like, "Everything I own is in that car, Rich." And I was like, "Yep." And then all of a sudden, right then, and this is why I will always buy these, an Nalgene floats to the surface. It survived. You know, boop. Comes right back up, like, "Chris, you still have an Nalgene." The only glimmer of hope in this evening is that we had this good friend named Jeff. He went by Geoff, and he was a master diver. He's one of those guys who has a certification for everything. If there's a certification for it, he's got it. So we go wake Jeff up. It actually is his birthday, and we're like, "Jeff, get your scuba gear. We need you." And he's like, "What? You're joking with me." "No, seriously, we need you to go diving in the lake tonight to get a car out. Stop lying to me, Rich. No, I'm serious. Happy birthday. Let's go." And for him, it was one of the greatest evenings of his life. He's like, he remembers that all the time. So I use that as a teaching moment to be like, don't loan out your vehicles. Just don't loan them out. It's just not a good idea. All right, we're going to get going. Tonight, we're going to do Matthew 5, 6, and 7. I'm going to teach on 7. I'm going to use your guys' help with 5. But as we get into that, I want to just give you a little video of the land again, because the land is what we're talking about. It's the fifth gospel. So Luke, go ahead and play that for us. It's going to work this time, I promise. subliminal to make you sign up. Yeah. First time I show that to people, they're like, man, Israel has great signage. Yeah, no, no, that's there. Israel's got actually very poor signage, actually, when it comes down to it. All right, what we're going to do is we're going to do something that I was just thinking about last night. I think it'll be fun. I'm going to make this side of the room, you guys are Matthew chapter 5, and this side of the room, you're Matthew chapter 6. And so you can get into groups of a couple different people, and I'm going to give you about 10 minutes. And I want you to look for things that we've been learning, cultural things that, you know, as you read it, maybe now this time of, as Jesus is teaching, he's pointing out things maybe that were of the normal for the people. And I'm just going to kind of have you guys shout those out to me as we go through in a few minutes. So an example of that would be when he talks about like the birds of the air, you know, maybe he's pointing at that. Or if he talks about agriculture, he's talking about that because these are agricultural people. So just looking for customs or little pieces like that. And then I'll do chapter 7 for us. And we'll kind of make our way through the Sermon on the Mount, which will be a lot of fun. So you've got about, like I said, a couple minutes. We'll give you about 10 minutes. Here's the map again, just reminding you where we're at. Right up here where it says the bread and the fish church, just above that is where we're going to be. It's the Church of the Beatitudes. I'm going to skip these. This right here is a picture from the Mount of Beatitudes from where the Sermon on the Mount probably happened, up here on this hillside. And it's looking down towards the Sea of Galilee. So as you dig in with the people around you for a couple of minutes, this is your view, because this is where it would have been, somewhere around here. So here we go. Go ahead and take, we're going to say 10, but it might be a little less than that. But just kind of get in a group of a couple of people. And just do a quick reading through it. Doesn't have to be in-depth study. Just look for things that stand out to you, and we'll talk about those. All right, I know I didn't give you enough time at all. But what we're going to do is just kind of do the Reader's Digest version for you younger people who have no idea what that is. Ask your parents. But let's start. And what we're trying to do, and my hope is that as we've done some context of culture these last couple nights, is that all of a sudden now you're going to be back into something that's very familiar to you, such as the Sermon on the Mount. And all of a sudden, hopefully, some of this culture stuff is going to start to jump off the page that we've been talking about. So again, these are Jewish people who are here hearing this. They're from the neighboring little villages in the triangle, and they're coming out to hear Jesus teach. This is more what a picture would have looked like. I had this picture up. That only looks like that a couple months out of the year. This is what it looks like most of the time. It's usually brown. It's hot there, and this is the Sermon on the Mount location. So let's just kind of go through. Chapter 5, those of you who are kind of going through, raise your hand, and then let's throw out just a couple things that stood out as you made your way through. So chapter 5, friends, what have we got?
11 says we should be persecuted, but 38 says that we should love those who persecute.
Oh man, isn't that lovely? You've got to remember too, which is great, I'm glad you brought that there, is that these are a people group who are under occupation, right? They're under Roman occupation. And so Jesus comes in very Jewish and says that, like, you know, persecution, like, we shouldn't be, that he says persecution is all right, and then he says persecution's not. And so he's pointing to the whole concept of going, we need to be okay with where we're at, and we need to live with the people around us. We need to live in harmony. We need to love our brother as ourselves. And so we're going to get these back and forth pieces inside of it, because he's using words of that day that they're going to resonate with. And then he's going to always spin it on them. A lot of times you're going to hear the, you've heard it said, but I say. So he's going to do a teaching. He's going to do what a Jewish person would do and go, hey, so-and-so says this, or you've heard so-and-so say this, but instead of going, I agree with so-and-so, he says, you've heard it said this way, but I tell you this is what you should do with it. So that's what makes people mad at Jesus. Who gives him the authority to do such things? Because teachers of the law at that time don't teach like that. They teach by using other people's teachings to be able to validate their teachings, and Jesus spends it. What else we got? What are some things that maybe, like, maybe it's agricultural, maybe it's an analogy of something that he says. What else does he talk about?
City on a hill.
City on a hill. Fantastic. City on a hill right here, right? Jesus is sitting there going, you're like a city on a hill. And they're all understanding what that is. Susita, we talked about this place. Everybody knew where it was. And the way that cities worked in Israel, especially in the Galilee and other regions, is that you had these big cities on a hill, but they didn't have room for everyone to live in them. So you had sister cities or sister villages that were down on the outskirts, and people would live down there and they'd farm down there. And when a siege would come or something would happen, you would run to the city. And if you'd paid taxes to the city, if you had paid your dues and all of that, the person, the mayor, the king, whatever, would let you in and protect you. And Jesus says, you're to be like that, a city on a hill, something that beckons people to it. Yeah, great. What else in chapter 5? Salt of the earth. Fantastic. Dead Sea. They know salt. Salt is a commodity. People want salt all the time. The word salary comes from the Latin word where we get the word salt. So salary is how they paid people. They paid people with salt because salt was worth something back then. Israel's got a ton of it down in the Dead Sea. And the whole thing that we're seeing here is like, if you lose your saltiness, even though this is a very, like something that everybody wants, if it's not salty, it's not worth anything. This is the Dead Sea here on the left. You can just see how much salt is just sitting there for the taking. And then you can see a person just like hanging out, floating. I mean, that's seriously what it's like. You can sit there and just float and do a crossword puzzle. Why not? And then I threw this one in there for you. They took a dress. This was recent. And an artist dipped it into the Dead Sea for a couple of days. And it came out crystallized in salt. That's a like a wedding dress right there or something. So crazy. Salt Sea. What else? Chapter 5. Other things that stood out. Everyone's like, nothing else. Chapter 5 was boring. We had murder. We had adultery. We don't want to talk about those things. Divorce. Fulfillment of the law. I think one just to sit there for you guys is do not think that I've come to abolish the law of the or the prophets. I have come to, I did not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. Jesus is not coming to say, hey, Judaism and the laws are out. He's coming to show them how to live them to the fullest and to have shalom. So I think that's a big piece because I hear people all the time saying that Jesus came and like got rid of that. No, he didn't. He was Jewish. He came in and said, let me show you how to live this and live it to the fullest. All right. Let's move on then if we're looking good at that one. Let's go on to chapter 6. So good job pulling a few contextual things out. Yeah.
Talk about the synagogue and doing the charitable deeds because you said a lot of things go on in the synagogue. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what he's doing with this one here is about charity. And the whole point of a community is a community takes care of its people. We talked about the man who was paralytic, and I said, these guys have done everything for this guy. It's not like he's just been like outcasted or all of that, any of that. They're doing whatever it takes. And so he's putting a thing in here of going, hey, when it comes to praying, fasting, when it comes to doing these different things of like giving money, charity, don't be like the hypocrites. And he's using a Greek word. He's using a Roman concept. So here comes Jesus the Jew, and he starts talking like a Roman. And hypocrites, if you remember, are the two masks, sad and happy. And when an actor would get on stage, they would get up there, and you would know what they were by the mask that they were wearing. And so Jesus says, don't be like those people who are fake. Be someone who's real. Let your deeds, let what you do resonate rather than just your action by itself. So it needs to be a heart thing. And they would have had, it just right there in the Galilee, there was theaters. I mean, in that video you just watched, you saw six different theaters, and those are all around Israel. So people are going to theater, and then Josephus says that in Jerusalem, there wasn't even enough people to do the sacrifice in the temple because the priests were all at the theater. So they're becoming more and more Hellenized as the time goes on. So Jesus is using these words, and these guys understand them. So that's a great point. Other ones? Yeah. Exactly. And in a Jewish interpretation of it is that righteousness is done where it's never seen. And so they would say, when it says that Abraham was counted righteous by his faith, it was his acts and deeds that were not seen the way he lived his life. And that would be an interpretation of a Jewish account. And I love how you just said it, because I think as Christians, we'd sit there and go, that's I think what Christ is calling to us when it comes to your heart. It's not about people giving you, hey, a way to go, but it's rather God going, you're living for me in all parts of who you are. And the unseen is the only place, that's the only place where no one else sees you besides God, is in the unseen. It's fantastic. Any other pieces? Yeah. I gotta believe that when Jesus is teaching this, that it's a little less dry than this scenario here. Because I think he probably is pointing them out. And I've been there many times when it looks like this, and I've been there many times when it looks like this. This is the time to go. But Jesus is just so great at the way he teaches. He teaches by things next to him. The birds of the air. I'm assuming that some birds came flying through and were interrupting his talk. And the birds in the air, you know, and that's why the disciples were like remembering these things. Oh, remember when the birds came by? He talked about those guys. Yeah, lilies of the field. So again, he's using what's around him. Anything else that stood out in chapter 6? Yeah. They're agricultural people, right? They have to store up things. And so Jesus comes and begins to make a statement of, again, what do you do with your wealth? What does that look like? Do you trust that God will provide, or are you relying on yourself? Yeah. And in this day and age, you could only store so much because you couldn't, you know, if you caught a lot of fish, you either ate them or you salted them. Jesus a lot of times says, give us today our daily bread, because bread, even at that in that day, and even today in Israel, if you go, you go to the baker for the day and you buy your bread for the day, because tomorrow it's hard as a rock and it's a weapon. Can't get it through security after that. But it's daily. It's something that you get for the day and you trust that God's going to provide that. Yeah, great.
Mm-hmm. Area, and even the demonic was pagan, and the Jewish people said we don't even go over there.
Mm-hmm.
That's there's a big distinction there between the pagans or the heathens.
Yeah.
And the God's people.
Exactly, and so you're getting that feeling too of that these cultures do come in contact a little bit, enough that they know what each one is. And again, sitting right here, looking this direction, you're looking right at Dionysus' temple. Shimmering up in the sky over in Susita. Perfect. See if I had any other ones in here for you guys. A mikveh, people were asking, because it talks about being clean. Here's an ancient mikveh. You can see here where the wall would have came up, this direction to divide the two, and you'd walk down into it, get wet, walk out clean. So that's your getting clean spot. There's a section that talks about walking a mile in chapter 6. That you'd be willing to walk a mile. And so these are Roman, this is a Roman mile marker. They're all over Israel. So again, Jesus is using a Roman term of going, by Roman government standards, you are required to carry a centurion or soldier's equipment for 1 mile. Walk two. This is the road to Damascus that's just been uncovered, and that's where this mile marker was sitting. So we'll leave it at that part right there. All right, you guys did great. I just wanted to go quickly through that so that you could start to pull some of those pieces. And I'm going to read chapter 7 for us, and I'll throw a couple of insights as we go. We could have spent all week just on Sermon on the Mount, and we're just going to run through this. But here we go. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. In Jewish culture, judgment is a real thing. If you had an issue, if you had a problem, you would take it to the city gate of your city, and that's where the king would sit, or the mayor, or whoever's in charge. Whoever's sitting in the city gate, they are of importance, and they would judge for you. They would be the ones to make the decisions. So when we read in the Bible and we hear about people sitting in the city gate, those are going to be people who are important people. In the story of the book of Esther, who is Esther's uncle? Mordecai. Where do we know he's at? He's sitting in the gate. Now, he's Jewish, and so the Jewish people, for them, they would go to the gate, and that's where they would find the people who would judge over them from the Jewish perspective. We hear of Solomon sitting in the gate. We hear of the different judges sitting in the gate. When Ruth and Boaz have the moment where Boaz is like, hey, I want to take Ruth as my wife, but I got to go talk to the elders, he goes to the city gate. That's where the people are, and they're the ones who are going to make the decision. So judgment happens. And so like here, Jesus is sitting there going, hey, we live in a world where we're doing judgments, but be careful how you judge. Don't just be taking someone to court. Don't be taking someone just to judge them, but live in harmony with them. Because the next thing he says is he makes a statement, why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? He's using just this awesome language here of going, your brother's got a little bit in his and you've got a ton in yours. How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your own eye when all the time there's a plank in your eye? You hypocrite, uses that word again. First take the plank out of your own eye and then you will be able to see clearly and remove the speck from your brother's eyes. All right, when you go to judge, make sure that you're living life well too. And If you're going to love God and love others, we've got to be people who aren't judgmental, but people who are loving our brothers in such a way that we want to see change. And so Jesus does this many times in the scriptures of sitting there going, there's a difference between judging somebody and there's a difference between bringing someone to a place of change because they're in the wrong. And he just lays it out for a second there of going, you guys like to dispute stuff? Make sure you are living your life before you go and take someone to court, before you take someone to the judges. I love where he goes on the next one. He says then, do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. Dogs, again, in the Jewish culture they're more like junkyard dogs. They're like not your domesticated animal that's sitting in your house and you're like, Fido, I love you. They're kind of running around doing their own thing. There's the parable of the rich man and Lazarus in Luke, if you remember it. And it says that the poor man, Lazarus, is sitting there and the wild dogs get better food than he does because they're finding the scraps around the city and then they're coming and they're licking his wounds. Like he's not even able to get them away. And so the dogs we're not talking about domesticated dogs. So Jesus is just saying here, this whole idea of going, do not give dogs what is sacred, because you don't give that to dogs, and do not throw your pearls to pigs. This is unheard of. You're not going to give your most precious thing to a pig. One, it's not kosher. Two, you're not giving up these things. And so Jesus is just like, this is what you're doing. You're giving away the most important thing that you have. And he's going to kind of play this out a little bit further of going, as a Jew, you're waiting on the Messiah. Don't just throw that out. Live for the Messiah. And he's going to talk about kingdom, and we're going to see that coming up in a little bit. Do not give the dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they will trample them underneath their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. That's how I talk to my son. Hey, Ronan, don't go do that because those things might, you know, bite and then tear you to pieces. You know, and he loves that. He thinks that those things are cool. One day, my son's outside. I'm all, Ronan, you can't go out there. There's mountain lions. He's like, you don't know. They could be friendly. What? No, they're not friendly mountain lions. We're not going to go figure out if they're friendly. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds. And to him who knocks, the door will be opened. In Jewish culture, it's all about hospitality. And hospitality is that you come to a place and then that the idea is if you knock or show up, you will be let in. And so Jesus is sitting there going, that's the same thing with my kingdom. My kingdom is one that I want you. You are invited. Everyone who comes is let in. There's no holding you back. And he's saying that to, again, a group of people who have been kicked out of, they've been taken from their country, taken to exile, then been let go, and they've come back to their country, but they're trying to figure out how they fit back in again. And he's sitting there just going, don't play these games of some people are in, some people are not, and we're beginning to get these religious groupings of people all over the place, Pharisees, Sadducees, Zealots, everyone's welcome. And then he uses this, which I love that he cuts to the core of people who are parents. Which of you, if his son asked for bread, would give him a stone? Or if he asked for fish, would give him a snake? Again, snakes in Hebrew culture represent just pure evil. Satan from Genesis, like this is this concept of the serpent, of going, okay, you know, which of you would, instead of giving him bread, when he asked for it, would give him a stone, but now he's asking for a fish, and you're going to give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law of the prophets. He nails them right here. How many of you would do this to your kids? None of you. Why do you do it to your neighbors? Love others. Don't give them something that you wouldn't do to your kids or give to yourself. Take care of the people around you. Love people like God loves you. Enter through the narrow gate, for the wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. And many will enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life. And very few will find it. So here's a wide gate. This is in Jerusalem. This is called Damascus Gate. The first time I ever saw it was late at night, and I called it the scary gate because I was scared. This is Damascus Gate. Here is the oldest photo I've ever been able to find of the Damascus Gate when photos were being taken. So it still looked quite the same, just again, roads and stuff. This is a wide gate. Wide gates exist because this is a walled city. They've got soldiers inside. They can defend a wide gate. And Jesus makes this statement going, we're not looking for the wide path. We're looking for the narrow path, the narrow gate. Here are narrow gates. You see how much more defensible these things are? This is actually entering into the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. And you can see the gate was wider at one point, and they closed it down so that people couldn't get into it quickly. And this is what would happen during the time of a siege or when someone was coming up against the city. They would narrow their gates so that you couldn't get in them, and it would be difficult to come in. So Jesus uses that analogy. And he says that whole piece here with it of saying, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction. Don't follow what everyone else is doing. We're going to have a saying that comes out years later that says, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. Well, that saying, while it might not have been that one, that's the way the world was living in the first century. Rome's got it down. Rome is the mega power. Do what Rome does. Rome has brought us theater. Rome has brought us bread. Rome has brought us circus. They've brought us food, water, jobs. Do as the Romans do. And Jesus is making that statement of going, don't go down that road. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Love only God. Don't love other gods. And so he uses the narrow gate analogy. Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. This is all over Scripture. Food, fruit, the vine, this is all something that is constantly used in the Old Testament and into the New Testament to represent the fact that God has given his people a land flowing of milk and honey. When we say milk, we're talking about goat's milk. When we talk about honey, we're talking about date honey. Everyone thinks bees, but date honey. Because a land that has agriculture and land that has animals, the two things that you need to survive. And what he's going to say here is fruit is important, because if you've got a tree that doesn't have good fruit, you get rid of it. By their fruit you will know them. He says, by their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but every bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit you will recognize them. I love this picture. This is in the Galilee. This is a fig tree. And there is a saying, and I want to read it for you out of Micah, because again, Jesus is using remez. Remember, as we talked about, people would have a context to something. So he uses two trees, right? What are the two trees? Well, a tree and a plant. Fruit, he uses a fig tree and what? Grapes, right? So check this out. Micah 4:4. Every man will sit under his own vine and under his own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid. For the Lord Almighty has spoken. All nations may walk in the same of their gods. We will walk in the name of the Lord, our God, forever and ever. Safety. There'll be no more war. Every man will sit under his fig tree and under his vine. Fig trees grow big. And when you're in Israel, like, these are the ones where, again, when you're sitting looking over the Sea of Galilee, this is a great tree to sit underneath because it's a fig tree. You can rest under it. Here's a one of a vine. In Israel, when they do their grapes, they don't have a ton of space, so they make them so they go up over a wooden structure, so it becomes a shade structure, and it also becomes a spot where you have the yield of your grapes. So a sign of safety and prosperity, according to Micah, is everybody having a fig tree and everybody having a vine. And Jesus comes through, and he uses the same two things, but he says, you know what? If you have a vine and a fig tree and they produce these things, you don't have one. You get rid of it. So he's saying, if you want to have prosperity, these pieces of your life, then you've got to follow God, and you will know people's fruit by what they have. One other picture is I was there in Israel with my good friend Ronan, and we pretended to be the two spies, Caleb and Joshua. There we are. The land is good. I'm here to tell you. Yeah. All right. That picture. Let's move away from that. We'll go to a wadi so that you're not scared any longer. That's what happens when you're waiting for people to show up at the airport and you're like, let's go take photos in there. And they come back to haunt you the rest of your life. All right, back to Matthew chapter 7 here. Finishing up with what he says. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven. And this is a scary verse. But only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And did we not drive out demons and perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from you, evildoers. It could be translated, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not go to church every week? Did we not give money to missions? Did we not go on missions trips? Did we not do all these things? And again, I think Jesus is getting to them going, these things are not wrong, but what's the heart behind it? Because if the heart behind it's not correct, I don't even know you. And I find in my own life, this is a huge conviction moment when I do any time studying in this section, is that I like to be a part of things that God's got going on. I like to be a part of church. I like to be a part of missions and all these things. But what's my heart? Living at a camp, working at a camp, is it for God or is it for my own gain? And so Jesus is hitting these guys with that. Finally, therefore, as he finishes this up, anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall because its foundation was on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. Before I ever went to Israel, I always imagined Israel is all sand. It's not. It's all rock. The place is like more rock than you know what to do. The place that you find sand is in the wadis, because the water rushes down and it pushes the sand into the wadis down towards the edge of it. And so as Jesus is talking about this, everybody gets this. There's not sand dunes in Israel. There's wadis. So he says, if you've listened to me and you put into practice the things I tell you, you'll be like a person who built his house upon the rock. And when the rains came down, it says, and the rivers come up, because they're not rivers all year long, you're going to have no problem. But those of you who hear my words and you don't put them into practice, you're like a foolish person who walked through a wadi and said, man, this is kind of nice. It's shady. I'm going to build my house down here. It's not a matter of if, it's when. Here's a picture of a wadi. This is us as a group walking through them. You can see how lush it is because the water comes through these spots. This is out in the desert. So this is, again, when shepherds are taking their flocks. These are the kind of places they're taking them to get water because the water gets caught in these locations. And at the end of the wadi, you see how much sand is produced in these places? Flash floods come right through here. I told you, I've been in two flash floods now. One of them was in June. It was crazy. Our bus was in the middle of it. We had to go push cars out to get them out of the way so we could get through. And I just want to give you a little picture of what that looks like. These are wadi washouts coming through the wadi, and this is water just rushing through these things. And so Jesus is sitting there going, if you listen to what I say, you're a wise person who doesn't build inside one of these places. But if you don't listen to my words, you're a fool. You're a fool who knows better. You're a fool who builds his house in one of these locations, and all of a sudden it's annihilated when the rains come down without warning. He finishes up and he says this. Well, when Jesus finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching. And remember this piece right here. Because he taught as one who has authority and not as his teachers of the law. Other teachers of the law would say, you've heard it said, and they would then use someone else to qualify their statement. Jesus comes through and he blows them all out of the park by going, you've heard it said, but here's what I say. And the Pharisees are going nuts. You do not have the authority to say that. And the people are sitting there going, they're amazed at the authority of which he teaches and not like the people of the law who teach with him. I want to finish off with one of my favorite things. When I take people to Israel, I want to get you to a picture here, back to this photo right here. I walk groups down to this location and we sit, and we always do the Sermon on the Mount. We talk about it. But over the last couple of years, I've had this awesome, amazing moment because as I would take the Joshua students over there, one of my staff who I've been working with for years, I just threw the challenge out to her one day. I said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we sat at the Sermon on the Mount location, someone came out and recited Matthew 5, 6, and 7. And all of a sudden, Kelsey says, yeah, I'll do that. I'm like, really? She's like, oh yeah, I got it. And it became a highlight of every trip I went on with Kelsey. I was trying to keep Kelsey along, like on my staff as long as I possibly could, because that was her sight. It got to the point where my Israeli guides who were Jewish and not Christians, they wouldn't always go to the sites with us because I can lead to all the different locations. They would invite their friends and they would show up because they would want to hear this. And so for you tonight, I asked Kelsey, I'm like, would you come and would you recite chapter 7 for us and kind of do it in a kind of a narrative style? We're not going to do all of it, but just chapter 7 because that's what we just read. And so for you, as you kind of finish this time off that we've had at Hume Lake together, we've been studying culture and all these different pieces, and maybe tonight you have a chance to hear someone recite it and maybe think about it, how it would have been heard to someone sitting on a hillside just like this as Jesus was teaching. So Kelsey, would you come up and do chapter 7 for us?
Is this on? Good. Okay. Judge not that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is the log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, it will be opened. Or which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a serpent? If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Enter by the narrow gate. For the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction. And those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life. And those who find it are few. Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. You will recognize them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorn bushes, or figs from thistles? So every healthy tree bears good fruit, but the diseased tree bears bad fruit. A healthy tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can the diseased tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus you will recognize them by their fruits. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall, for it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it. And when Jesus had finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one who had authority and not as their scribes. Yeah.
I'm telling you, it was always a treat. And so that was also great, Kelsey. Thank you. It's been an honor to be with you guys. Keep digging into the culture and the backgrounds of first century and Judaism, because that's going to bring alive your Christianity of what Jesus is teaching. And there's a lot of great books like we talked about. My business cards are up here if you just want to ask questions. I've loved it. I've loved the questions you guys have had. So finishing off, is there anybody who would like to try to do the Shema for a backpack? All right. Hey, no one else raised your hand, so we won't say that you used to live in Israel. So. Nicely done. And when you guys are leaving, if you want, I've got some pens up here. All I'd ask if you take one of those is that you just promise that you'd pray for Israel and pray for the people there. It's a passion of mine for my Arab friends, my Jewish friends who are all over there, that they would come to know Jesus. And they live in a place where the miracles happened. And so they're standing there, like right where it was at. And so I'm just always praying that that would happen. So if you'd join me in prayer with that, take one of these pens. Maybe it'll remind you to be praying for people over there. And you're welcome to grab one while supplies last. You can still pray if you don't get one. So I'll let you into that club anyway. We'll dismiss. And then if anyone wants to stick around and ask questions, I'd love to answer any of those. And again, yeah, it's been a privilege. So give it back to Chuck.